How does the alarming increase in teen mental health issues throughout the pandemic relate to addiction and suicide?
We'll be discussing this hot topic with Adventist social worker Dustin Young today on Real Family Talk. Join us.
Welcome to Real Family Talk. During this episode, we're discussing how mental health issues in teens has increased throughout the pandemic and how it relates to suicide and addictions. Many parents and educators are asking, is there anything we can do to change this reality?
Today, we're talking with social worker Dustin Young to get a better understanding of what's happening to our teens. Dustin, thanks for being here with us today. So you're currently working in the social work department at Andrews University. Can you tell us a little bit about your position there and what kind of work you do?
Wonderful. I'm a professor here in the social work department at Andrews, and my clinical work has been about 14 to 15 years working with at-risk teens and most recently with community mental health in a rural location. And so that means I did a mix of crisis response work. I worked with schools. I worked with both public and private schools, and then clinical one-on-one. So it's a wide range of work, and then transition to teaching future social workers so that we can continue that practice and some of the advocacy that's been going on.
That's amazing. So you are actually on the front line. So as you teach students, you can actually share with them what it's like to be in that type of setting.
Very much so, very much. The last 2 years, I have been telehealth almost primarily. And while I started my career working with at-risk teens, and I always said I would never work with young kids, and God has a sense of humor, that I began to progressively work with younger and younger kids. And that is an adventure. I greatly respect teachers who have been doing so much adaptive work over the last 2 years, because I worked with about 4 and 5 year olds on telehealth. And so the creativity, but also the opportunity to be invited into families in a way I had never worked with families. There was good stuff that happened during that time as well.
That's remarkable. Last year, the American Academy of Pediatrics declared children and adolescent mental health a national state of emergency due to the increased mental health distress present for individuals, families, and communities. Dustin, can you help us understand what is going on and the driving force behind this mental health emergency?
Well, and I always wonder a little bit of if it is the level of emergency and distress and fear over the last several years, or if we're finally talking about it. I think that this is a both and. And finally, this discussion is coming up and folks are discussing how much distress or fears are affecting young lives.
Yeah, that is a great observation. And, you know, I'm also on mental health. And so I think you're absolutely right. Perhaps we have not given it the attention that was needed in the past. And now it's been exacerbated during the pandemic. So, you know, either way, it's great that this has been brought to the forefront, you know, what our teens and what our children are dealing with. And, you know, even when I hear you speaking about 4 and 5 year olds, it's just always so shocking to me that, you know, we would have 4 and 5 year olds dealing with such challenges, you know? So as we deal with this, what are some of the risk factors for suicide and addictions in young people, and even some of these small children? Because we know that even 7 and 8 year olds are committing suicide now. So is there a predisposition, or are there things in our environment that might cause these propensities or these behaviors?
I like that question. It can come with a lot of different layers to the answer. I always say social workers never give a direct answer. We always say yes and. And it is an element of if you have high stressors, if there's some family components, do we have some trauma or big changes that happen in your life? Those can all create vulnerabilities that people look for ways to meet the need or help with coping. And so that's where the vulnerability for addiction, as well as what we call experimentation, and then suicide, either ideation or risk factors. And so there's not an easy direct route of saying this individual is going to become suicidal or they're going to become addicted to something, whether it's substances or behaviors. But we want to look at those vulnerabilities.
That's a good word, vulnerabilities. Yeah. Yeah. And so what can parents do to mitigate these vulnerabilities? You know, again, with these young children, what are some of the things that they could notice or stop doing that are exposing their children to these propensities?
I think one of the things parents often will say or ask me are things along the lines of, am I messing my kid up? That's a good question to ask. And it's that relational. Biggest thing parents can do is spend that time with their kid, with their family, and then be intentional of building community around that young child or teenager. Because there's a power in having mentors. That's a protective factor. So we talk about vulnerabilities, but we also have protective factors that come into play. And those healthy relationships, sometimes it's easier to hear something from someone who's not mom or dad. And so we want to look at building connections, looking at how is our life with stability. And when we have trauma or crisis that happen, because we know life happens.
That's right.
How do we respond to it?
So essentially what we're hearing you say, Dustin, is that there's a lot that parents can do or not do to mitigate the propensity for mental illness and even anxiety or depression in young people. And we've been seeing a lot of this happening during the pandemic, where it has become heightened because of all the other things that you've mentioned, but especially also because the situation has changed, the relationships have changed. The space has changed. People have been in greater proximity to each other and has put pressure on the relationship. It's been wonderful listening to what you're saying. Well, after the break, we'll come back and listen more to Dustin speak to us about how to mitigate this situation with young people. Stay with us.
Today on Real Family Talk, we're discussing the alarming increase in the rate of mental health issues in teens and children, especially during the pandemic, and what we can do about it. And so before the break, we talked a little bit about risk factors and stressors. And Dustin, you started speaking a little bit about protective factors. So how can faith and family play a protective role in protecting our children and our teens from addictions and even suicide?
Faith and families are powerful. Having that area of community, research shows that having engagement in just even church services or faith services can increase quality of life and longevity. And one of the things that even when I assess for suicide, I will ask for if there are faith-based beliefs, because it is a protective factor. There is an element of if I have a bigger purpose or somebody else to look at my problems with, that's a protective factor. And family, how we manage crisis, how we manage difficult things and how we problem solve is powerful. Kids are watching how parents resolve struggles. And so parents model powerfully the skills and what to do when life gets tough.
Indeed. I like the fact that you're talking about parents modeling So what kinds of behaviors should parents avoid in order to mitigate these addictions and suicidal ideations?
So some of the things that parents can do, whether it's young children or adolescents, kids are not dumb. And we tend to sometimes avoid topics when we could take them on with kids and talk them through at an age appropriate level.
Yeah.
And so talking openly with kids is another area of protective factor. The other thing is beware of telling kids to act one way while you do something differently. That is one of the things that will lose credibility for you. And having that authenticity, it's hard to do. It is hard to do. But when we do that with kids and teens, it provides this area for if I make a mistake or I begin to experiment, I'm not hiding it from you. I may come to you when I feel like I'm in over my head. And that's what you want.
So what I'm hearing you say is building trust by the way we model appropriate behavior. And by the way, we're consistent with our talk and our walk, so that when our children are interacting with us, they know that they can depend on us because what they see is what they will get. That's what I'm hearing you say.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, okay. So tell us a little bit more about what are some of the signs that parents can identify that their child might be turning to drugs or some other addictive products, and or even considering suicide, because, you know, sometimes as parents, you may just think, well, you know, our child is just having a sad day. You know, they'll get over it. They'll get past it. I'll take them for ice cream and they'll be okay.
I always like ice cream too. But when it gets worse and when it becomes a concern, addiction first. So when we talk about addiction, one of the things is, have you noticed changes in mood or in behavior? This is where that relationship comes in really important, because then you start to notice some changes. Have maybe a friend group changed, or they're not sharing, or you're concerned of maybe some behaviors that are not being honest. The other thing would be looking at the side of suicide risk. There isn't a look to suicide thoughts and actions. And so even in my own practice, I've started to do what's called universal screening, that even though you may look like you're having a wonderful day, I'm still going to ask you some of those hard questions. Now, for a parent, it may be how you deliver that question. And if it is a bad day or a bad couple of days, we want to be concerned if we see a emotion that is longer. If it's gone a week or 2 weeks and no major mood change, we're having some concerns there. And so to even ask, and ask in a way that is, you can ask the question in two different ways. And I always do it this way. If I'm going to ask someone if I'm concerned for their safety, I could come up to you and go, you're not thinking of killing yourself, right? Or I could come up and say, I know we have a bad day and I've noticed you're having some hard times the last few days. Have you started to have thoughts about hurting yourself? Or sometimes people will think of killing themselves. How many times have you thought that this the last 2 days?
Wow.
And it opens a conversation.
Wow. And do you find if parents ask this question that the child is willing to answer it honestly?
Yes. There's a power in opening that question. And if you notice that second question didn't, it gave an option to say, I haven't been. But it also validated the fact that having thoughts about suicide is not something to hide or is bad. It's something that sometimes can come when we're in a really low place, or life has been really scary, or we've made a decision that we want to avoid, or we want to escape the emotion with it.
Wow. Can I ask
so
one?
So you validate.
Can I ask one question on this? So for parents that are listening to this, what if the child says, you know what, I have thought about it? What's the next question?
So the next question may be, one, I'm going to say thank you. Thank you for telling me that. That's powerful. A really hard thing. The next thing I'm going to tell parents, I'm going to tell church leaders, I will tell anyone that listens to put in, whether it's in your phone or in your calendar, the Suicide Prevention Lifeline. And basically that number is 1-800-273-TALK.
In the United States.
And they will talk with you. In the U.S., yes. And then there are some international or some text lines. And so you've got some resources to talk you through it. But if you also are concerned for safety, immediate safety, meaning that they may disclose that they have done something that is time urgent, physical safety, I'm going to tell you, call for help.
Wow. That's remarkable and very helpful.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that the parents who are listening are taking note and engaging their children in these constructive conversations that can save their lives. Mm-hmm. We've been talking to social worker Dustin Young, and we'll be right back after the break. Stay with us.
We're back on Real Family Talk with Dustin Young, a licensed social worker from Andrews University.
We're discussing suicide and addictions in teens, especially in the middle of the pandemic. And we want to thank Dustin again for taking the time to be here today.
So, Dustin, you've helped us bring light to this issue. Is there anything we can do to help stop this trend? What are parents and even educators to do?
I think the biggest thing I'm going to say is become educated yourself. Connect with some trainings. Connect with your resources. I'm a huge advocate of community mental health. Oftentimes, they will have prevention specialists on staff who will do trainings. Invite them to your church. Get engaged with something called mental health first aid, or another area that's very focused on suicide prevention as well is called QPR. Question, persuade, and refer. And so those are areas that we start to talk about mental health more in the area of you are not going to be an expert in this area unless you go to school for it. But it will become more of a knowledge base and comfortable with asking tough questions and knowing what to do when you hear answers that may be fearful. And then again, getting those resource numbers, the text lines, it's something that we had in our church office where I served. I have it in my office. I have a number of phone numbers actually in my phone because I never know when that conversation may come up. And so being prepared helps your own anxiety. And then teach your kids what to do. Kids are one of the best folks who will identify, my friend, something's going on with them. They know. And once we empower, sometimes that is another protective factor, is that I know what to do. I can help.
In the line of protective factors, which is certainly very important when we're dealing with issues of suicide or teen addictions, what part can faith play in curbing this trend?
I think when we talk about faith, it's really important of how to frame it. I asked some of my students this, and they said, can you tell them God's not out to get you? He wants to protect you and help you. And so that area of how do we share what faith is? How do we share what it looks like in action, and especially when we're having really dark days? And so that authentic approach about faith is vital, but it is a protective factor. There is something to be said when we look at the recovery community. So when folks have been working through addiction and they're engaged with what's called the recovery community, they build that community, and having faith in a higher power is so very vital to staying on track with goals. And so sharing your faith, this is where modeling comes in as well. How do you talk about God? How do you talk to God? And what's the tone you hear when he's talking to you?
Wow. Yeah, that's just so important, again, that we don't use God to inflict further harm to our children, but rather show them who God is and what a loving God he is, and also model in our own lives. I think that's really critical. You said earlier about some of the things that you were doing in your own church. And so just to expand that a little bit, what can churches do to support families or to bring this issue to the forefront? You know, you also mentioned the mental health first aid. If you could talk a little bit more about that, that would be great.
Well, first, I will gladly talk about my group at my church that I moved from Oregon just before I came to Andrews. During the pandemic, we went quickly online. I was the acting children's elder. And so we went online. And when we came back together, we had to get creative of how do we do this hybrid thing. And so we built a tech team. We built makeshift iPods and iPads and gimbals and put the tweens at that time to work. And I will tell you that some of the conversations that happened and the shifts that kids went from, do I have to go to church, to mom and dad, hurry up, we're going to be late, were shocking and encouraging. But it also was a time to mentor, a time to talk about, you have a vital part in this church. We need you. And so give a job, give a purpose. They don't just need a kid's Sabbath. They need a job. That's because right. They're part of it. And the other part is mental health first aid is a great training about first aid. How do we look for those things? How do we look for problems? How do we look for concerns? But it also takes and demystifies a little bit of mental health challenges and concerns and builds empathy. And so they do have teen trainings. They have trainings for teenagers as well. And so I'm going to encourage churches, put that in action. I had a student who challenged us to have Narcan in our churches. And Narcan being a medication that if you're concerned somebody has overdosed can interfere with that. And it just brought to my mind, again, how students here at Andrews are changing the talk and the dynamic of, oh, I hadn't even considered having that. Is my church a place that I should have that on hand? I hope it is, because it's saying I'm inviting folks who are struggling. And so those are just simple ways. Start the conversation.
Wow, Dustin, you have given us some amazing information, and I really hope that as a result of today's talk, that families will change their conversations with their kids, especially as so many of our children and teens are going through difficult times right now and during their teen years, just in general. So thank you for being with us. Thank you for sharing so honestly and transparently, and we certainly hope you will come back again.
And of course, though times may often get tough, there's always hope to be found in Jesus. As you go through challenges in your own life and as you try to help others, remember the promise found in Psalm 35 that says, "Weeping may endure for a night, but joy comes with the morning. A better time will come, so just hang on."
Thank you for watching Real Family Talk. Join us again when we'll share more about strengthening families and inspiring hope. See you next time.